Is this the reading room?
Yes, I'm Saad Manzoor.
And I'm Travis Howard.
This is Reading Room Talk. Thank you for pressing play. Welcome, welcome.
Yeah, welcome back, everyone.
Welcome.
Thanks for taking the time.
Yes, welcome. We have made it to the top of the food chain.
We're talking
bench pressing board scores, we're talking power tools, we're talking about hardware, we're talking about orthopedic surgery. We got Dr. Terrell Julian here with us today. How are you?
Yes, sir.
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good. Well, Thank you so much for making the time.
Anytime.
We appreciate it, man. So let's ask you. So take us back to med school. What was your toughest class or rotation in medical school?
Oh, med school. So I went to GW med school. And
shout out. Yes.
Yeah. There was a notorious general surgeon who was, he was old school. He was from the Hopkins, Harvard, residency tree, grew up there, and he really worked us hard. He was one of those guys who really tried to get you off your game whenever you were presenting, whenever you were rounding, whenever you were doing anything. And he sauntered around the hospital. He knew everybody, knew everything, but he was one of those guys who, when he walked in, he commanded the room, and he would just, he would mess with you in front of people. So I just remember this guy rode me pretty hard. And I think it was great training because it taught you how to, adapt and excel when you're very uncomfortable. And he made sure that I was very uncomfortable every second of every day. So
his name,
I'm not going to say it because I think he is still in the area, but he was rough. But I remember a couple days after the, after our rotations ended, I didn't even know he had my cell phone. And he called me and said, "Hey, you did a really good job. I was impressed with everything you did." And I was like, "Oh, wow, he doesn't hate me. All right."
Oh, that's
nice.
Wow.
So what do you think about, so there's a lot of change going on, especially in, training in the surgery arena. And I think a lot of trainees are sensitive to what we would call a more malignant environment. Do you think that this surgeon would have fit in today's climate, or how do you think that adjustment's taking place?
I think, so that's a great question. I think the environment that we trained in is vastly different from what trainees are now subject to. And I think the right answer is sort of the happy medium, because life isn't flowers and roses, but you also don't to tear people down all the time. Being a surgeon, being any type of physician is tough, because if you aren't used to adversity, and you could be an AFM doc, you could be an ER doc, you could be an interventional radiologist, and then the first time that you deal with adversity, or someone who doesn't like you, or someone who gets under your skin, is a patient or a colleague, and you don't know how to deal with that, that's problematic. So learning how to have thick skin, I think, is important. It's almost just, you can think of it as socialization for medicine, but everything's degrees. So, somewhere along that medium is that continuum is a happy medium.
Yeah. No, and the rotations are important because it kind of does kind of help you, make a decision about what you're going to be able to do. Because sometimes it's not even about, the actual, thing that you're doing every day. It's whether you can get along with the personalities there, whether you can grow and actually, function in that type of high stress environment. It sounds like you did a great job being able to function in that type of environment. So that kind of put up the, world for you to do surgery. So that's awesome.
Yeah, 100%. The part of the rotation, it's really like finding your tribe. Finding those people who you are going to, who are going to get the best out of you and who you're going to want to work well with. And everyone's different. And if you have an idea, you want to go into X, Y, and Z, and then you find out that maybe those aren't your type of people. You're not going to excel or achieve at, 80, 90, 100% of what your capacity is. Then you've got to have that sort of, for lack of better terms, come to Jesus moment and say, "Hey, this isn't for me. I'm going to do something else." And that's also part of that too, right? Everybody wants to go to, the Mayos, the Stanfords, the Harvard Worlds, but sometimes you might not do as well there as you would at a different institution. And so it's all about being honest with yourself and finding out where you are going to function best in, and where you're going to blossom the best into physician that you're going to be.
Absolutely. So tell us, so where are you from? Where did you grow up?
Right. So for me, I grew up right outside of Philadelphia, a little town called Lower Gwynedd, which is in Montgomery County. Coincidence that I live in Montgomery County, Maryland now. So
Full
almost like I
circle,
came full
honey.
circle. Yeah, 100% full circle. So my dad, he's still alive. He is a psychiatrist. Mom was a nurse. Couple brothers and sisters. I'm the youngest of five. Girl, 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 boy, boy. So I was the last one. A couple physicians.
Wow, the baby.
Oh, big family too.
Yeah.
Now, did any of them go into medicine as well, or was it kind of, or how did you get interested in it, I guess? That's our question.
Well, yep. So a couple, almost all of them went into medicine. So oldest one, she is a nurse. And then middle sister, she is a GI doc, then OB, then my brother's a cardiothoracic surgeon. And I became an orthopedic surgeon. So medicine,
That's awesome.
the environment of having just exposure to medicine, it was definitely there when I was growing up. So I think it made sense, and it was very second nature to my family. Everyone in my family is, including me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Now, did you like you were kind of interested from the beginning, or were you kind of interested in different things in like, elementary school, high school, college?
Elementary school, high school, and college, it was soccer and medicine. That's all it was. Just soccer and
Yeah.
medicine. So I went to Davidson College, played soccer there, ended up being, I was pre-med. And so just balancing soccer and medicine, I think was very it was time consuming, it was hard, but it's one of those things that I think looking back on, I think it was a really good experience.
Well, that's awesome. Now, what position did you play in soccer when you were there?
So I did, are you guys soccer players?
We know soccer.
Not me.
We don't play.
So there's different formations in soccer. Counting to the back, it's called a 4-4-2. So four defenders, four midfielders, two attackers. Then there's variations to it, 3-5-1. So when I was growing up, sort of played the top of the diamond in a 4-4-2, and then
Wow, okay.
2 years in college, we played a 3-5-1. So I was just this solo guy who roamed around up front by myself. So
That's awesome.
essentially, midfield forward.
Yeah, that's really cool. Wow. And now, did anyone else in your family play soccer, or like, were you kind of the first person?
No, so growing up playing soccer, I benefited from having a brother who's 2 years older than me. And so, one mom can only do so much. And so she said, "Sorry, you're not gonna be able to play with kids your age. You've got to play with your older brother's team." I was like,
Nice.
"'Cause he couldn't play down, so you can only play up." So I grew up playing soccer with people who are 2, 3 years older than me the entire time. And when it came time for me to be remediated and play with kids my age, I had the experience of playing with older.
Best, yeah.
So
Makes sense.
I was really lucky. I think that was one of the reasons why I excelled in soccer, because I'd always played with kids who were older than me. When it came to time playing against kids who were my age, it was very easy.
Oh,
And this is your brother, the cardiothoracic surgeon, correct? Right?
that's
Yeah, so he didn't play from the start. So you definitely had a competitor you were up against, so.
And you never want to be worse than big brother, so you'd work
Yeah.
hard. You want to be worse than little brother, so it was a friendly brotherly competition that
But
just sort
you see that in athletics a lot, absolutely. Like when you have an older brother who's good, it's gonna make the younger brother like a lot better, like younger sibling a lot better too. So that worked out for you, it sounds like really well.
yeah it was almost like the Serena Venus Williams type thing.
Exactly,
I mean,
exactly.
completely different degree. I mean, this is I would not say I was the Serena Williams of soccer. There's nowhere
No,
close.
but I mean, but like that, but still, just that, like having that mentality, like that kind of teaches you, like in life, to be able to, like, accept competition and, like, even if like things are against you, you're like able to kind of, just try your best and kind of focus on just trying to get better, So that's awesome. That translates to everything. So it sounds like it translated for you in, in undergrad. So you were pre-med and playing soccer. I mean, how did you maintain that balance? That's like not easy at all.
No, it was really hard. And I look at collegiate athletes now, especially with the NCAA tournament going on, and I'm wondering how these guys are even doing anything remotely academic. You've got games 2, 3 times a week, and they're not in your backyard, right? You're
No, you're traveling.
traveling different time zones. You're playing on ESPN 2, 3 nights out of the week. It's really tough. So when I was at Davidson, we were in what was called the Southern Conference. It was before we went to the A10, the Atlantic 10. And so when we did play games, We would play against Furman, which is down in South Carolina, or UNC Greensboro, which is only about an hour and a half, 2 hours away. Local games were against, the Dukes, UNCs, NC States, things like that. The furthest we ever had to travel for a league game was down to Mobile, Georgia, which is Georgia Southern. That's kind of Mobile, Alabama. Was that Georgia Southern? I don't know. It's one of those schools. But it was about 4 or 5 hours away. And I just remember bringing the physics. I wasn't the only one who was pre-med, luckily. I just remember bringing physics books, trying to read those, keeping the light on, when you're traveling back after a game.
That's tough.
For labs that you missed. It was tough, but luckily at Davidson, the faculty, they recognized that. So there were opportunities to go do extra sessions for labs that we missed, and they were responsive to it. But it's definitely teaches you how to manage your time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I was going to say Davidson is not easy at all. I remember was it last year? I think Steph Curry, they wouldn't retire his jersey until he actually graduated, I guess. So they're very strict about the academics there, and you were able to get through, which is awesome.
It's that Presbyterian work ethic that they were so famous for.
I love it. So now, did you take any time off between between undergrad and med school, or how was that transition, I guess, for you?
I did. I actually went to Japan for a couple years. Went there for about 5 total years.
Wow.
Right. And very so cool. Yeah, it's kind of a convoluted story, and I'll try to make it simple as possible. But when you guys remember this, if you are going to be a straight shot through from college to med school, you've got to take your MCATs when you're a junior, because that process is about a year and a half in terms of your MCATs, the interviews, and everything like that.
It's not the LSAT or GRE, exactly.
No, it's not. Yeah, definitely. And so I actually went abroad to Australia when I was a junior in college. It's one of those things with Davidson. It's such a small school that they say, hey, if you want to keep your sanity, you've got to go abroad because it's just too small. And I said, oh, that's great. I played soccer in the fall. Can't go abroad in the fall. So I'm going to go abroad in the spring. Did that in my spring. So that meant I was not about to take my MCATs when I was in Australia.
Yeah,
that's not going to work. So I didn't take my MCATs while I was a senior. So I had a year off. I knew I off. So I applied to what was called the JET program, the Japan Exchange Teaching Program. And I went over to Japan to initially I just wanted to go over there and teach for a year and then come back. But 1 year became 2. I was studying Japanese, really loved the culture, traveling around, making some money. And I said, you know what, I'll come back in about a year and a half, 2 years. And then it became 3 years. And then I got to the point where I said, hey, it's time to go back. I want to go to med school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, lo and behold, and I don't know, most people don't realize this, but your MCAT scores are only good for 3 years.
Oh, is that true?
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know it either. And so when it came time to apply for med school, I started applying. I was in Japan, so I said, I'll apply to all these West Coast schools. And luckily, it was someone in the admissions office at UCLA. She said, wow, we like your experience. We like your scores, but they're not going to be valid anymore. Yeah, I said, what are you talking about? She said, they're only valid for 3 years, and you're year 3. By the time you get around to applying, it's going to be your 4th year. So you've got to retake these.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Just studying Japanese for 3 years. That's
yeah, right. that was tough. So, and that was honestly was one of the best things for me, because I had to, again, have that sit down, talk with myself and say, is this something you really want to do? Because you've got to pick up all those books again, all the, the chemistry books, the books, all those MCAT prep books. I don't know. What did you guys take? Was it the Kaplan? Was it exam?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We were watching Review, but yeah.
Yeah, system review. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I had to find a way to get all those again, go over them. And I said, all right, well, I'll do it. And luckily, I did better the second time around, which
was, I was about to ask you, because I was going to say, I feel like when you're an undergrad and trying to study for your classes and the MCAT, it's kind of tough. But then when you have a focused, amount of time to just study for this test, you could actually do better. So
yeah,
surprised. Yeah, that,
and I think awesome. A lot of it is familiarity as well. You've taken it, and if you've done well, then you're going into a second test with some degree of confidence, I'd imagine.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I remember the second time around, I was like, been there, done that. And the testing, the prep materials had gotten so much better over 5 years, I guess it was 4 years since I've taken it. I walked in and I knew that there was no physics math question that they could confuse me with. I was like, I know I'm going to get a 15 on this. I was like, all right, you can always wrap this around in some way where I might not get it right. And the English, English, but I knew on that basic sciences part, there was only so many ways you can ask the same type questions. So I walked in a whole lot more confident than I did when I was a senior in college.
Wow. That's awesome. That's really cool.
Expired MCAT. That's a first for me.
Exactly. Wow.
No one really knows it because they usually take it. If they don't like the score, they take it again the next year. You don't have many people wait 3-4 years.
I was going to say, I mean, like, it sounds like you kind of have familiarity, at least with like the process. So you're like kind of confident to know that you can try it again and do it again. So that's awesome, because I feel like that could have scared a lot of people and be like, okay, well, I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to stay in Japan or, you know, whatever. So that's awesome that you were able to, you know, get it together and just reapply now. So where did you end up going for medical school?
Yeah. So medical school is GW, George Washington University. Yep. So Dave's in college, then GW, 4 years in DC. Love the area. Plus being from right outside of Philadelphia, you know, home was only about an hour and a half, 2 hours away. So, and then East Coast.
Oh, that's awesome. And now when you were at GW, were you interested in surgery the whole time? Were you interested in different things, or how did that process go for you?
Yeah. So at GW, I knew I was interested in surgery. I thought orthopedics was what I wanted to do. Orthopedics or plastic surgery, I think. It was two. One of the things I actually did between med school and college, I guess it was med school in Japan, was I did Operation Smile. So Operation Smile.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was fantastic. And that actually really stoked my desire to go into plastic surgery, because basically Op Smile, it's cleft lipped palate surgeries the entire time. And where did we go? We went to Honduras, and that was fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome. So what would be a typical day there, I guess, like when you're doing the surgeries? Like, can you kind of paint the picture for us?
Right. So you were paired up with a plastic surgeon, and typically you would go in, do your quick evals of all the patients. It was probably about 3-4 surgeries per day. And, you know, they were done at a small sort of makeshift local hospital. So, and these were kids. So they weren't getting on a gurney being sort of pushed from, you know, to OR and then OR to PACU. You were walking them from, you know, pre-op over to PACU, or sorry, to the OR. You do the surgeries, and then you would literally pick the baby up and walk them over to the.
Awesome.
But you know, you
what
got.
Was
to,
what was your role, like, I guess, in that, like, at that time, like, in the process?
Right,
carrier. My role,
yeah, carrier. Yes. Just back and forth. Your job was to sit there and make sure that the plastic surgeon didn't fall asleep or just basically pass out.
But you're in the OR, though. That's awesome. That's
yeah, exactly. So it's OR experience, and you're with the plastic surgeon, making sure that he or she is having a decent time and being conversationalist with them, learning a little bit about anatomy, but doing a lot of the stuff you do as a med school student. So you're dabbing, you're cutting sutures, doing a little bit of suturing as well, if he or she trusts you. Not really much in terms of operation at all. You're essentially just a second set of hands, and you're an OR assist.
Oh, but so that experience is like, that's priceless. That's really cool. So
I want to go back to your experience in Japan. And if you could tell me what you loved about the culture, and can you say that your experience there makes you, how does that affect your day-to-day today or your day-to-day as a surgeon?
Oh, wow. So what I loved about their culture, culture is one of those really, that's a really broad term. And I think different parts of culture manifest themselves differently in different parts of the country. So Tokyo culture, completely different from Kyoto culture, which is totally different from, I guess, your suburban or what they would call Inako, which is countryside culture. Mm-hmm. I think Japanese people and the whole culture, it's very welcoming because I think if you look at their society, there's some aspects that are very homogeneous, right? Everyone growing up, And the high schools and grade schools dress the same way. They're not allowed to dye their hairs. They're not allowed to do anything that sort of breaks the norm. And then for them to actually see what they call gaijin, so we're foreigners, and then to learn from us, it was a big thing for them to actually say, hey, wait a second, we need some outside influence. We need to mix things up a little bit. And so where a lot of the cultural exchange and the teaching came about, because you'd have Japanese teachers who couldn't speak English very well teaching English, and that doesn't work. So they would bring in people like us, these fresh college students from, England, Australia, Philippines, United States, and we would work with them. So it was a team teaching approach. So that was excellent. I felt like this was, 20 years ago, but they were really at the point where they were saying, hey, you know what, we need to open things up a bit more. We need to welcome in foreigners more than we had in the past. Their food is unbelievable. I mean, I've never eaten so much fish, lost so much weight, and felt so. Usually, when you eat, you just gain weight, and it was almost like you could eat as much as you want. You were just you belt size after it was like a belt buckle notch. It was like
That's
eat,
awesome.
like, click, click, click. I'm like, all right, nothing fits me anymore.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's
I'm
really
sure it's
cool.
like different than when you're in North Carolina. It's
Oh
different.
yeah, isn't a barbecue totally different?
Yeah. And the reason why I ask if you can attribute any advantages that you have today is because when we talk to other folks, who have had these other experiences between, undergrad and medical school, or even, before they get into the practice of their specialty, they're always so happy that they had that experience. And they can say,
Yes.
well, this makes me a stronger surgeon because X, Y, or Z, or a stronger radiologist because of that. So, I'm willing to bet those experiences that you had just made you a more well-rounded orthopedic surgeon for sure.
Yeah, so I think two things really come to mind. First is just the desire to be in medicine and the realization that it's just not something that was handed to you. I had to work to get into medical school. I had to really focus once I was there because I was older than most people. A lot of the people going into med school, they had just finished college and they were, even some of them were in the sort of 7-year program. So they were a little bit younger, 21 years old. And they were like, all right, I'm starting med school, or I'm 20.
Yeah.
I was 28. And I knew that. I didn't, I thought at that point, all right, this is my last chance. I'm going to hunker down. I'm going to focus. I did all my partying. Like I partied in Tokyo. It's one of the coolest cities in the world. I didn't need to go to DC and go party. So I was laser focused on getting the job done. And one of the things GW is really, really well known for is, I guess they called us non-traditional med school students. Yeah. Right. There are some med schools that will not take you unless you are 22, you are, the top of your college class, and you've done X amount of research, and that's what they wanted. And these are the Dukes, the Penns of the world. That's what they were going for. GW didn't really want that. I mean, they were happy to have that, but they also realized the just the maturity level of people, it changes. And some people, if they've been out for 2, 3 years, if they've been a nurse, or if they've worked as a consultant, if they've done something else, they bring something that's intangible to that med school class. And GW was very good about that. Most of the students were over 50% were quote unquote non-traditional. So they had had a they'd had a job before to medical school. So that was nice. And again, it's all about finding your tribe. One of my best friends, he actually worked in the neurology department at GW for six years or so, and then he decided, all right, well, now I'll go to med school. And we're still really good friends to this day, and he lives in the area and our families are friends and stuff like that. It's
Oh,
just
that's awesome. Yeah. Just to have someone who has like a kind of a similar like perspective on like med school as you, like when you're going through it, is super important because
it's helpful.
yeah, making it through by yourself is tough. It can be very lonely and lonesome. So that's great. That's really good. So tell us more. So tell us how was your process, I guess, applying to, surgery or orthopedic surgery residency?
Yeah. So after I decided that orthopedics was what I really wanted to do, then it was a matter of really trying to find that program that is going to help me become the best orthopedic surgeon. And that's what rotations, the external rotations are for. I remember I did external rotation at Northwestern in Chicago, and that's where my sister was, one of my sisters was working there. So I said, hey, Espena, who's my big sister, my youngest big sister, up rotation there, did one at Mayo Clinic, and I did the one at Mayo Clinic more to figure out what the research angle is like at a place like Mayo, because I think Mayo in every single disciplines almost sets the bar, or were there a top 4 or 5 program in every single discipline, and I wanted to see what that was like out there. Also did one at Harvard, which is where I ended up, and so those were my those were the ones I targeted, and obviously it was at GW. So it was all about finding the program that really allowed me to sort of blossom. And so I ended up picking Harvard. And what I liked about the Harvard program was it was a big program. So a couple hospitals. There was Mass General's, Brigham, and BI. So Beth Israel, and then we all rotated through Children's. So at least 4 hospitals that we were going through.
How big was the residency class?
Yeah, there were, let's see, for 12 of us per year. So you'll miss
That's
12 of
massive.
us. Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's a
It
lot.
was for me.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. And
How did
I
you?
guess, yeah, go ahead, Travis.
I was just going to ask, how did you know you wanted to do orthopedic surgery?
Well, when you did the intro about what would you say, bench press and board scores and
Yeah. Power tools.
yes, power tools.
Hardware.
So I what really spoke to me about orthopedics was the ability to get in, fix a problem, and see some immediate results. Patient comes in, broken bone, patient, once we're done with them, fixed bone. It's all about them rehabbing. I think personally, my attention span to really manage these lifelong problems, maybe I don't have it. I like to see something, be focused. Do my best to intervene and fix it, and that's what I was able to do. An orthopedic surgery, it's either you know or you don't know. It's very physically demanding, and I knew growing up that that was something I'd be able to do. I remember, sorry, let me back up. When I was a kid, I was injured a couple times, but I broke one of my vertebrae wrestling.
Wrestling.
Yeah.
Wow. You went hard, Dr. Julia.
I did so I like I said, I grew up playing soccer, and I was at this high school where you had to do 3 sports. You had to do one in the fall, winter, and summer, or sorry, spring. In the spring, everything for me was focused on how can I become a better soccer player. The spring was track. Unfortunately, there was nothing really in the winter we could do. We didn't have winter soccer. So I said, you know what? Just wrestling is always good. In soccer, there's a lot of hand play, a lot of stuff you need to be able to do. And I said, you know what? Wrestling, I'll wrestle. And I became pretty good at it. And I remember wrestling this guy who was much better than me. And he put me in this move called a splaydle.
Sounds dangerous.
Yeah, it is what it sounds like. Imagine being on your back and your legs being sort of forked apart and pointing in 2 separate directions.
Oh,
Yeah, he did that to me, and all I heard was a pop, and then I remember
no. Oh,
it was a pop, and then it's the end of the period. I rolled over to stand up, and I had this horrible shooting pain in my back that went down to my leg, and I told my coach, I was like, oh, I'm hurting. This is killing me. He's like, you're doing great, just don't get pinned. And I was like, I don't think you heard me. I'm really hurt right now, and whatever, I got pinned. I told my mom, I was like, Mom, my back's hurting. She's like, oh, I've got a good idea. I'll take you to a chiropractor. Terrible.
Oh, yeah. That's
Right after he reset my back 2 or 3 times and I could barely walk, she's like, I'll take you to an orthopedic surgeon. And so, x-rays, CT scans later. Yep, you got a broken vertebrae. You're going to be in a plastic, hard, firm plastic back brace for 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, man. Did you miss the soccer season or?
It was towards the end of the winter, so I missed the spring season. But just that experience, that was one of those ones where I said, wow, I just had a big problem, big muscle skeletal problem. This guy came in, he set me right. This is fantastic. I could never thank him enough. He made a really big, just really positive impact on my life. This is something I want to do going forward.
Do you remember his name or her name?
You know, I don't. Not at all.
Shout out though. That's awesome, man. Like sometimes you just need to see someone doing it, you know, to like
that's right.
You know, give you that inspiration.
You know, no surgery at all. It was just the diagnosis and the actual treatment. So, you know, as opposed to smacking on my back and resetting it. it's called a CT scan. And yes, this shows a shiver broken bone.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's that's funny, man. So I love it. So take us. So during your residency, it sounds like it was a pretty positive experience at Harvard.
So there were, you know, residency ups and downs. And there were some highs. Did a lot of research, made a lot of great friends, continued to learn how to work, but there are also some lows. There were a couple times during residency where I questioned myself. I questioned whether I was smart enough, good enough, or whether I deserved to be there. So it wasn't all roses.
Yeah. Now, can you tell us like, what was like, I guess the makeup of the class? I mean, were there any other African-American or other, you know, non or minorities like, residents there?
There were. One thing Harvard did in terms of their residency program, they were pretty progressive. I think in terms of their average, excuse me, they always had at least 25% females. Very quote unquote female friendly orthopedic program. So they were very progressive in that standpoint. There were two other African Americans. So out of the And let me back up. So my class, there were 12 of us, two African-Americans, three African-Americans in total, and three females. So if you think about other residency programs, special orthopedics, orthopedics is, you know, it's kind of the good old boys club. So, you know, and it's usually males too. So when you look at the number of females, orthopedics, very, very low.
What did you think about practicing medicine in Boston?
That was a learning experience.
I hear that, man.
But Travis was in Boston as well. He's at MGH too. So.
Yeah, man, that was different. Very different than where we are now. I'm very happy to be where I am now. I'm just gonna say that.
Completely different, because the crazy thing is you're at MGH and you look around at the staff and the other residents and docs, and it's almost like a United Benetton commercial. And then you take a step out on Fruit Street and you're like, what just happened? Completely different. So I thought that was again, learning systems. You have to know as a minority that you have different rules. Different rules apply to you. You don't get the same treatment. You're going to be scrutinized more. You're under the microscope more, whether you know it or not.
Yeah, for sure.
These are learning experiences, and you know, you can take them in one of two ways. You can get frustrated and wonder why it happens, or you can say, all right, you know what, you show me this, I'll find a way to achieve. And I think that's how you have to look at it.
And I think you end up doing a little bit of both. You know, we have to scrutinize and try and correct it, but also achieve and perform better, the best you can. Best you can, yeah.
You're right, and you were alluding to it. It's not as good as you can or the best you can. You've got to achieve better than you thought you could. You can't be as good as the other guys. You have to be better. And you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt. You're not going to get, you know, you're not going to get invited to the, you know, the fishing trip. You know, I mean, that happened. Like, you guys went on a boat twice? Rotation two? Maybe you thought I couldn't swim.
That's real. I mean, like, do you feel like you were kind of alluding to like the situations where you were kind of questioning yourself? Was that kind of related to what you were just talking about, or was it like a different situation?
A little bit about that. Sometimes just whether it was true or not, I felt like there were times where people came down pretty hard on me, and I know this. I will tell you what is fact. Is that I was confused with another minority in my class because
Oh, yeah, that happens.
oh yeah.
well, but it wasn't just they flipped our names. That happens all the time. You just kind of laugh it off, and they learn how to make a joke and keep going. But this was a performance thing, and I remember this one MD said, "Hey," it was a trail of emails that he didn't think I saw, and he said, "So and so missed X, Y, and Z during this rotation, blah, blah, blah." And I went back and I said, that wasn't even me on that rotation. It was someone else. So I'm not sure how that really, how that should be held against me because
That's super frustrating. Wow.
No, that's wrong.
I
All
can
the
tell you,
way wrong.
yeah, I can tell you for a fact, I wasn't even in that hospital at that point.
Yeah, that's
That's challenging. That's enough to
that's
piss
happened. That
you
happened to me during my internship as well. Like we had like, I think out of like 10, I think 10 interns, we had like three African American, or actually four African American interns, like males, and all, yeah, whole year. People did not know who was who. So it's that can definitely happen. So
Yeah, you're all
it's
clumped together.
yeah,
You
unfortunately.
marginalize, it takes away your individual, who you are. It's like it's a problem.
Yeah, and it's frustrating when you're like someone who like is willing to like do the work and is willing to like actually, make it happen, but then, you can't control that. Like that's just something you just cannot control at all. So that's super unfortunate. But you still made it through, and you
Right.
sounds like you decided to do a fellowship afterwards as well.
Yep. So fellowship was out in San Diego, and I remember the decision at this point. I was in Boston, and I'd been in, from Philadelphia or right outside of Philadelphia, DC, Tokyo, Boston. I sat there and said to myself, "Wow, I've hit some of the best cities in this country. Where else am I going to go? Is it going to be set down?" And the places I was looking at Allegheny, which is in Pittsburgh. Again, Mayo out in Rochester, Rothman Institute in Philadelphia, UCSD, UCLA, and I said to myself, and I think Rush somewhere out in Chicago, said to myself, "Wow, there's only a couple more cities left that are better than the one better quote unquote better than the ones I'd been in." You know what? Never been east or the West Coast. Let me go. Let me do that. So I ranked UCSD as my number one and ended up at UCSD, and it was excellent.
Yeah, it sounds like it was awesome.
The only thing that was tough about UCSD or San Diego was the fact that we're on the East Coast. You've got four seasons. We're in the spring right now, and we had a very mild winter, but it goes by. You sort of break it up. You're like, what, 3 months, 3 months, 3 months, just because the weather is completely different. Out in San Diego, I think it rained three times, and every day it was 68, 74, except for maybe a week or there, weaker here and there. It was a really long year. I remember thinking, I was like, this is a long year. And that's
It
when there's no variation in your weather. And don't get me wrong, I loved
is.
it because it was just so nice, but it was a long year.
It's advantages to you to both. I did my fellowship in LA. I felt the same way after like being in DC. It's like it feels longer. It was nice, obviously. Like you can like, run outside in like January. It was just awesome. But it is different. It's definitely different. So, and tell us about your fellowship. So you did a hand fellowship.
With the
Correct.
hand.
So, yep. So, just like deciding what you want to go into, for residency, you do the same thing in orthopedics. In orthopedics, you have sort of a wide variety of people. You've got they call us hand weenies. We're sort of the more intense, detail-oriented plastics type people. And so, you do a hand fellowship, you do a lot of nerve repair, small vessel repair. Then you've got your big prototypical meathead orthopedic surgeons. They usually go into like joints, maybe trauma. And then you've got your people who are loving the money and they go into spine. Then you've got your sportsy people who are sportsy people. And then a slight variation on them, which might be more upper echelon, which is the shoulder guys. They're sort of the high-class sports guys. So that's how you sort of break down. That's how I break down.
That's
And
a
then
great
there's,
breakdown. Yeah, that's
and
awesome.
then I forgot. Then there's the foot and ankle guys.
Yes.
And so that's kind of how you break it down. And I know myself. I'm a pretty detail-oriented person. I think about things maybe a little bit too much. I love the control, the decision making that comes with hand surgery, and I love sitting down operating too.
Yeah, sitting down, very important.
Yeah. And the loops, right?
The loops, and these special loops. Now, so it's so funny. So when I was looking, when I was thinking about doing spine surgery, because like I told you, I hurt my back, and I was like, you know what? I think spine surgery is gonna be great. We would do these big long spine cases, and then I would, and you're sort of standing up, hunched over this steep hole, and you're working in a spine. And then afterwards, your back would hurt, especially you had the headlights on and the loop sometimes. And it was a lot. And I realized that it was really hurting. And then between that and the fact that a patient can come in for an elective surgery and then leave an elective surgery and not be able to walk, I said, that's not where I want to go. So hand was very much like that in terms of the precision. But you get to sit down and you get to really have, there's just a lot of control in the hand surgery realm. And now we've got, speaking, the reason I went off on this tangent was this, the loops that they have now are, they're almost like the dental loops where you're actually sitting looking straight up, your posture is as if you're looking straight ahead, and they've got these mirrors that then reflect it down at 45 degrees, straight down the field. So,
Very cool.
yeah,
Man,
the sort of wearing loops for hand surgery is now disappearing.
wow.
I remember thinking I wanted to do hand and wanting to do plastics or orthopedics, and I dissected the hand and thought, it's so there's so many moving parts. It's so complex. It's like when you talk about being detail oriented, I could see how that'd be a great match for you. It's a respect, man. A lot of respect for going in the hand and matching there and being a
Absolutely.
hand surgeon. It's not, it can't be easy.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. As you pointed out, it's so, there's so many muscles, so much physics, and so much delicacy that's in the hand. But that's the challenge, and that's what I love. I love the fact that when you're working on a hand, you're helping somebody who, you know, we all need our hands for everything, whether we're typing, holding a glass, whether we're using a mouse. All these things, they're so important. And when you take someone's hand function away, then that's a big problem. So we as hand surgeons, we all love what we do.
That's awesome. That's
Yeah.
super cool. Super cool. We appreciate you doing this with us, and we'll get you out of here on this last one. So, like, tell us. So, if you were talking to a student or like a med student or someone undergrad is having a tough time, what would you tell them to kind of help them get through?
Don't let the bastards get you down. It's life is about challenges, and you come out stronger on the other side. We can all make excuses, but I think what is important is that you look at every knock on you as a challenge that you need to overcome. You gotta, you almost gotta, it's like Michael Jordan. You gotta play with that chip on your shoulder. You've got to go out and want to prove people, prove something to yourself, and you've got to be motivated. It's hard, but it's always worth it. And one thing that we didn't get a chance to talk about is just having that mentor who is who looks like you, who's had the similar experience as you. I think that's really important. That's one of the reasons
I
why I
agree.
to this institution was because I'd never had an African American chief. And so when I had that opportunity, when I was looking around for jobs, you know, there were a couple different job offers out there, and I said, you know what? This is going to be the first time where I'm going into a where I have the chance to go join a group where the vast majority of people look like me and my chief looks like me. So that was terribly important.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
I
Shout out
love
to Case.
that.
Love him. Love him.
And
Yeah.
I want to ask one other question here because I want to go back to that difficult surgeon that rode you hard and wanted to give you a hard time. How did you face him? How did you do it? How did you survive? How did you perform better than you probably thought you could? What did you use to get through it?
Well, I think that's when you draw on your past experiences. And again, when you have a tough experience, don't fold, don't buckle, because it's going to be a stepping stone and something you're going to refer back to when times are hard. You know, when times are hard on the soccer field, when I was, you know, growing up, when times were hard at Davidson, when I was in college, when times are hard in Japan, you know, you keep kind of building up these experiences. So when you actually do have one of those times where you got to call on them and you got to look yourself in the mirror and say, can I do this? You look at yourself and you say, hey, I did X, Y, Z. I got this. You can't beat me. And I
I
think
got
that's
you.
an important thing. So every challenge is an opportunity to kind of build up on yourself.
That's
I love it.
awesome. Like that's the correct mentality. And you have to kind of not forget about those challenges either. I think sometimes people like get through it and they just forget about it, but you have to use it as motivation to get through the next one. That's awesome advice. And that's exactly how you have to do it. So I love it, man. Well, we appreciate you doing this with us. And yeah, we appreciate all the cool stories. This was awesome.
Honestly, anytime, you guys, let's do it again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, stay low
Appreciate
and keep firing.
you. Keep going.
Please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you get your pods.